Everybody, welcome aboard. This is our Tuesday morning get-together. Michaelson here with you. What we're going to do today, we're going to chat with an Iowa legislator in a few minutes. He is going to talk about investigating Planned Parenthood in Iowa. Or at least, not specifically Planned Parenthood necessarily, but abortion providers, at least. We're going to talk about that later. Also, how to learn the names of all the presidents or all the states in the union. Going to have some of that conversation for you. That'll come up later. Plus, there's a practical side, what I was suggesting later, about indentured servitude. No, I'm not starting that debate again. What I am going to deal with, there is a practical case here in Iowa that just happened involving the death of an Iowan and somebody who didn't belong here in the first place. There is no current mechanism to hold this varmint accountable. I'll tell you about that later. Oh, I like people that seriously annoy all of the right people. I think I've latched on to one this morning. He has been publicly denounced by the Federal Bureau of Investigation, been denounced by the Secretary of Labor, the Secretary of Agriculture, the Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, the Postmaster. All right, James, what did you do or say to be denounced by the Postmaster General? How dare you? What did you do?
Well, I've written a lot about how the Postal Service shafts its customers, how they're intentionally slowing down mail, how their productivity is a mirage, and how they're hopeless, and how they should not have a monopoly over first-class mail. So,
okay, all right. That's just for starters. Also been denounced by the International Trade Commission, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, the Agency for International Development, the Drug Enforcement Agent, Federal Emergency Management Agency, and the Sierra Club. James, everybody, do you have any friends at all?
Not many. It's a much shorter list of folks who like my work. So, but it's the story of my life. Been that way ever since elementary school.
Where you were denounced by your first three teachers?
Two out of three. The first one liked me, but from first grade it was all downhill.
Once you started to correct the textbooks, they get really annoyed by that, don't they?
Well, yeah, I think we had some controversies about Confederate history back then.
James Bovard is the voice you're listening to. He has written a bunch of books. An autobiography called Public Policy Hooligan. Let's see. Attention Deficit Democracy, The Bush Betrayal, Lost Rights, Destruction of American Liberty. Now you're working for USA Today. What is your role with those folks?
Well, the thing I'm doing, I'm on their board of contributors. I'm not working for them directly, but it's sometimes I write articles for their editorial page. And the editor there, David Mastio, is actually from Iowa. David mentioned he'd been on your show back when he was in college.
Yes.
Talking about some of the politically correct stuff. So,
yes.
And I hate to miss a chance to mention that I'm also from Iowa, sort of. I was born in Iowa.
So. Where?
Ames.
Okay, close enough to the university to have been tainted in some way, I'm figuring.
I didn't know that there was a taint from Iowa State. I figured University of Iowa or maybe from Grinnell. Sure, there's a taint. Iowa State, I thought, was just, you know.
Only if you like close your Iowa eyes and squint and think about football.
I'll work on that.
Okay, so the reason I invited you on, because in addition to just to renew old acquaintances, is just to pick your brain a little bit about what you've been observing about recent the political process. I would describe James as sort of, I think the word we agreed upon was libertarian-esque. Libertarian tendencies, let's put it that way. But you're not an ideologue?
The thing I always try to describe myself as, I try to say I'm a moderate, but it usually doesn't work.
No, because moderates, the moderate middle keeps moving. What was moderate last year is now radical.
Well, that's true, and it seems that the moderates have just kind of faded into the background. It's and instead it's just a barking contest, and it just seems it gets wackier every year, it seems.
Okay, so if you were going to be the barker, which variety would you be? Would you be a pit bull, a toy rat terrier, chow chow, poodle? Where would you be in the barking scale of decibel level?
I think I'd probably just be a weasel.
Sneak around and chew on ankles, eh?
It comes natural to me as a journalist.
You've written a bunch of books because you had to study for that and do a bunch of research for that. Well, half the time when you find yourself in a room, the political rhetoric or party conversation is probably annoys you, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, I don't know if I'd say it annoys me because my expectations are plenty low at this point. But it's interesting to see how the standards have fallen so radically. I mean, if people could pop up on YouTube or whatever and watch some of the debates from the 1980 presidential candidate between Ronald Reagan and Jimmy Carter, I mean, it would be like watching Aristotle versus Plato compared to the candidates today, because the use of language has gone downhill, the standards, the logic, and it's fine to think back 30-some years ago, people were mocking Ronald Reagan for being a dumb actor, but if you look at the type of arguments and rhetoric he used, it was so much loftier, usually, than what we're hearing from almost anybody today.
Evaluate the Bernie Sanders effect.
Bernie Sanders has proved how much people dislike Hillary Clinton. Mrs. Clinton has been in the public eye for decades. There are a lot of liberal female friends of mine who just loathe her. I mean, and just think of her as almost as odious as she could be, just for selling out almost everything that she claimed to believe in at various times. And I think much of the Bernie Sanders effect is simply folks mortified at Hillary Clinton being the Democratic nominee. Flip side is there are lots of people who are dumb enough to like socialism out there.
Or they are hoping for a check.
Hoping for a check, which has certainly worked out very well with the current president. He certainly boosted the number of people, he certainly boosted the number of people who vote for a living instead of working for a living. But as far as Bernie Sanders, I mean, There are some ways where Sanders does not seem nearly as venal as most politicians, at least if you don't look at him closely. And I think that's having some appeal to people. I think there's a sense that he's more forthright than most politicians.
Plus, he's old enough; he just doesn't care about the chattering class.
Which is a good bias because most of the chattering class doesn't really understand policy that well, and they're judging it like a horse race and. And very often they're biased in favor of bigger government.
Well, what do you think of then? If Sanders is the no Hillary vote, is Donald Trump the no Bush vote or the no any of the Republican vote?
I don't have a good answer for that. It's kind of fascinating in a morbid way to see how Trump's campaign has taken off and become so popular. Trump has showed that the support for all the other GOP candidates was much softer than what people thought it was. I'm certainly happy to see Jeb Bush being pushed into the dark. It's kind of mortifying that another Bush would even attempt to become president. Likewise for most of the other Republican candidates who seem like they're basically being paid to champion really bad ideas from the last 15 years.
Anti-Zarzar. I like that.
It was a nice phrase. That was in the New York Times.
It has a ring to it, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it sounds better than saying it's a really surly book.
I have once labeled one of your books. I think it was on Bush.
Bush or attention or attention deficit democracy. There was it was great blurbs from you, which I use, and one was, this is a really painful read, and the other was, it's a really surly book. And I said, you know, yeah, that's, you know, he's honest. It's Iowa honesty.
Yeah. I don't remember which one it was of your books. I was looking for it yesterday in the stack, because in a couple of your books, when you write about freedom, and when you write about the way it is supposed to be, you are capable of some very lofty language and inspiring prose. And you had a couple of paragraphs that shall endure. And I like you.
Thanks
you're
very much.
An inspirational writer when it comes to that. Because my form of libertarianism is maximum freedom, maximum responsibility. A lot of the current libertarians, some of the Paulistas, only are interested in the first part. And usually when it has to do with their use of what are currently illegal drugs. I want to do that. And I want the freedom to do that. But I don't want the responsibility that comes along with it. And if I crash and burn, I'm going to charge you for picking up the pieces.
Yeah, which is a very unfortunate follow-up to being in favor of making drugs legal. I mean, that's something I've been writing about for 30 years, but I fully agree with you that the foundation of individual liberty is individual responsibility, and folks have to be able to pay for their independence and take care of themselves, and not be waiting for government bailout if they screw up massively, or for some kind of government intervention that will give them preference or a legal club to use on other people, folks should just live peacefully and take care of themselves.
How did you annoy the Shakespeare in the Park people there in D.C.?
Because they really
came down hard on you because you had you didn't appreciate them turning A Midsummer Night's Dream or Hamlet into a ballet or in just leaving out words and substituting dance moves.
Well, you know, I would not have any problem at all if folks want to turn Shakespeare or anything else into a ballet. The thing, I did a piece last month for the Wall Street Journal. There's a local theater group in D.C. that does Silent Shakespeare, and they're
Silent Shakespeare.
Silent Shakespeare. So it has those folks have done about 10 different Shakespeare plays, and they leave out the words, and they have now they are now explicitly claiming that their dance moves and pantomime is deeper than Shakespeare's words. And they are federally subsidized, so surprise. So I wrote about them and just kind of had some fun with them. But mostly I was focusing on how wonderful Shakespeare's words are, how uplifting and how insightful that they can be. But
you didn't think the pirouette was doing it for you? I mean, it wasn't Shakespearean enough for you?
Maybe it's because I was raised in the mountains of Virginia, but I've always been biased against pantomime. Or may have been from Bloom County because there was a great series that they had of Opus the Penguin whacking mimes once. But it was interesting that there's so much love of this theater in the D.C. area that there were a lot of attacks on my article. And my favorite attack was in the Washington City paper, which said I was a twat troll.
A what?
A twat troll.
A twat troll.
Yes. Which is not a phrase. I mean, people call me a lot of things over the years, but I saw that on the screen. I said, I'm a what? I said, okay, let's do a Google search. Well, I didn't find a good one for that phrase there, but, you know, okay.
Well, you give her credit. At least it alliterated.
Which is
something
a wonderful thing. Which is a wonderful thing. I mean, it almost rolls off the tongue, but you're not sure where it's rolling.
where it's going to end up.
Indeed.
James Bovard is on our newsmaker line, and we're going to chat with him another segment here. I'm going to get down to politics and other stuff. You're welcome to be part of it. He's a prolific writer, and he's a fun conversation on News Radio 1040 WHO. Coming up, I'm going to tell you what won the contest for Miss Teen America. No, it wasn't her current events stuff, and no, it wasn't the swimsuit competition. Tell you what it was, and the homeschoolers out there, listen in, because you'll be inspired. Right now, though, James Bovard is here. He is much-published writer. He's a thorn in the side of contentment. What I should have done, I should have pantomimed that line there, Jim, so you'd appreciate. I don't know how to be a thorn in the side of contentment. I could do that. Just jab my thumb, my own thumb, into my ribs. Do you see that?
Well, it's a story of my life.
Hey, you know that we were talking about Donald Trump a few moments ago. I want to play you a soundbite from Conan's program last night.
Okay.
I'm going to just tell you what you're going to hear. He jabs Donald Trump and calls him a joke. This is a New York audience, and listen to the response Conan got on his own show.
No, this is getting ridiculous. This is really getting stupid. In some states, the joke presidential candidate D's Nuts is polling at 9%. Meanwhile, the joke presidential candidate Donald Trump is 25%. I thought that was crazy.
Wow. A New York audience boos Conan over a joke at Trump's expense. What do you figure that means?
I guess they need to choose your audience more carefully.
Well, I'm thinking that if you can get a New York audience to boo an attack on Trump, Trump has got some deep roots.
Well, it's hard to figure out exactly what's going on. I think Trump is like a lightning rod for the people who totally are distrust and are nauseated by the current political system and the current political choices by the folks. By politicians have come on year after year and promised to fix this, that, or the other.
Right.
And instead, the government keeps getting bigger. It becomes more intrusive. It's still very dishonest. And here's someone who's promised to take a hammer and break some of that. And folks are desperate for a leader. I think that's part of Trump's appeal. Folks really, many of his supporters, let's just say, are probably not well informed of Trump's previous position.
Well, I was looking at this morning from Politico. There are some state GOP leaders around the country that are going to require the candidates, and they're targeting Trump. They have to pledge to support the Republican presidential nominee and then not run as a third-party candidate. You can't get on the ballot in our state, says the people in Virginia, North Carolina, unless you swear to those propositions. That's how desperate they are.
Yeah, and something like this is one more sign of why it's bad for political parties to control the ballots, because they just try to fix it in a way that people's anger will not show up. But Trump has hit a live nerve because a lot of people are so angry. I hope a way can be found by other candidates that will channel that anger in a more fruitful way as far as actually putting a leash on politicians and actually decreasing the power of government as opposed to simply stirring up pointless rage and making people think that here's a great new leader who's going to solve all the problems, because nobody can do that.
I was interested to see some of your other writings, and speaking of outrage that we still all share is what happened on 9/11. And you just wrote about this a few days ago. And you still you think we still don't know if our quote friends and allies and source of some of our oil, the Saudis, helped fund that form of terrorism? You'd like to know,
right? Well, there was a Congress did an investigation in 2002 that found a lot of details about how the 9/11 attacks had come out had been carried out. There were 28 pages of that report that are still suppressed, even though the both Democrats and Republicans who were involved with that said there was no reason to withhold it. Walter Jones, a very conservative congressman from North Carolina, has been the guy pushing to get these 28 pages public. And apparently the 28 pages contains information about a possible Saudi government role as far as the 9/11 attacks. 15 of the 19 attackers on 9/11 were Saudis, and yet there was a concerted effort by George W. Bush to keep that suppressed until after he had invaded Iraq, which some of the Bush administration officials attempted to link to the 9/11 attacks with no basis. Here we are, you know, 13 years later after the report's finished, and the Obama administration is now suppressing it. And it's important to get these facts out there because there are so many folks there in the Middle East who we should distrust. And I think our Middle Eastern policies have been a fiasco in part because we've kept trusting people who we never should have trusted in the first place.
And we keep protecting people who don't merit our protection.
Absolutely, and we jumped into these controversies. We really have no idea what the heck the U.S. government is doing. You know, we're trying to find moderate rebels. Isn't that kind of an oxymoron?
Yeah, a moderate terrorist would be a
moderate terrorist. I mean, it's just
they'll only half chop your head off. They just meet you in the middle.
Well, and it's just bizarre that a lot of people think that the U.S. should be financing and arming folks who are not quite as radical. It's like, you know, we don't have a solution. We have no solution. Yet, anyhow.
In this case, though, we have plenty of access to energy that we could develop and make ourselves totally independent of that part of the world. And the Saudis realized that, so they started dumping oil and driving the price down.
This is getting ridiculous. This is really getting stupid.
What was that? I don't know. It wasn't me.
It wasn't me.
I don't think it was. Sorry, it might have been. But anyway, I accidentally hit the Conan thing again. Anyway, back to the point. I don't know if I've lost my train of thought here.
You were thinking about the Saudis and the price of oil, how they're driving down the price of oil to shaft the U.S. Shale producers.
Yeah, they even borrowed money and sold bonds so they could pay their bills while they sold oil below market values to drive it down. And just like they did in the first oil crisis, they drove our American business, oil business, under. Now they're doing it again. All the fracking and some of the other stuff that we're doing is now being less than cost effective when oil is down to $38 a barrel. I'm figuring we could win that if we just decide not to play.
Well, I mean, I don't know all the factors that are moving the price of oil, but I do know that it's nonsense for us to be blindly supporting the Saudis and the other governments in that part of the world because we have just been dragged into one initiative after another, and it's like, and there is no learning curve in Washington. That's part of the trouble. You have the boys from Iowa who are sent over there to fight and die. And, you know, it doesn't bother the congressmen because they still have their very comfortable lifestyles. They're chauffeurs in some cases. And the same with a lot of the federal officials. I mean, folks in this neck of the woods are not bleeding from those wars like people in Iowa do.
With that, I'm going to have to move on, James Bovard. What should we look for in the future from you? I know you're going to be helping with USA Today, but you're working on some books and articles, and who are you going to offend next?
So many targets, so little time.
Thank you for your time this morning, James. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks a lot.
You bet. Bye-bye. Right after our farm markets, I'm going to tell you about Miss Teen USA on News Radio 1040. I have some friends who teach in the classical Christian ed movement in classical Christian ed schools, private schools around the country. And one of the elements of classical education, especially in the transmission of skills to K through 3 or 4, is repetition and memory and memorizing vast quantities of material. And it has lifelong effects in two different ways. First off, the kids tend to remember what they have memorized to some degree later in life. And secondly, it trains them and their minds with the ability to memorize in the first place. And that is hard. As you get older, it's even more difficult. And I really admire those kids who have had the advantage of being in learning.